Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 337. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward and Amazon Ad School, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, really funny. I was mentioning you in Ad School, and one of my Ad School students was, "Oh, well, that's an unfortunate name," with FFS Media. And I'm like, "No, it means what you think it." Anyway, how are you, Claire?
I'm doing great today, Brian. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Sure. I'm pretty good. It's so interesting connecting with different authors on where they're at versus like where I used to be. I posted a few memories, a few Facebook memories from 8 years ago and then 6 years ago in the past week. And it's just so interesting. Like 6 years to the day of recording this, I lost a major freelance job that was responsible for about 60% of my income. And I didn't know what I was going to do. Somewhere Book Show had started, but only relatively recently. And so I just had no clue what was next. And to look at that post and frame it as an opportunity, even back then, even though having no clue, and I talk about like these half-baked business ideas that I don't even know what I was referring to 6 years ago, but but really interesting, and lots of people commenting on the memories and saying like, "Oh, wow, well, we're glad that freelance job dried up and things worked out the way they did." And what were you doing 6 years ago, Claire?
2014, I was teaching. I was teaching 8th, 9th, and 10th grade English and working as the project coordinator for the school district at the same time. I was doing about 70 hours a week.
Wow.
I think I was making $37,000 a year. And
those numbers are not in your favor.
No, that was not my favorite time of my life, but I have come a long way, because the next year I took that leap and I went into writing full time. I quit that job. I leapt before I had the income. You know, it was kind of like, what do we do now? Okay, we better get to it. I mean, I had like freelance editing projects and that sort of thing to keep me going. So those kind of carried me. But yeah, man, I tell you, a timeline is just so useful.
Right.
To go and look at the timeline of events in your life and be like, wow, this is a lot of forward progress. It is so easy to forget how like unknowable the future was and how scary that was. And then be like, oh, this is actually like, this is pretty great.
11 or 12 years ago, I would have looked at $37,000 a year and been like, man, I wish I made that at Starbucks. That timeline.
I was the breadwinner of our couple. We weren't married yet, but John and I were dating, and I was definitely his sugar mama with 37 grand a year.
I was not. It took a long time for this guy to provide sugar, but it is really helpful. I love this timeline concept. I feel like even though we weren't intending it, this does segue a little bit into something we're talking about today, but not like full on. We might have to look at the 6 to 10 years in the past where you were question for today.
Right. It kind of feels like, you know, with the stock market, any 20-year period is better than the, like any moment is better than it was 20 years before. Like it goes up and down, right? But you know, as long as you're kind of over time averaging out higher and higher, which I think most people are. I mean, we have some big setbacks, right? This year has been a big setback in a lot of ways for a lot of people.
Right.
But I think that perspective of time is just so crucial.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I love that. This is nice. This is picking me up. I was running out of time this morning. And so it's nice to think about things in terms of 6 to 10 years and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Claire, do you have anything going on this week that you want to share with the group? I know that now it's a couple weeks where you're Supercharger series course has been live.
Yeah. I haven't really promoted it because I'm just kind of waiting. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do it. But we did do an AMA last week on Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was a small group that turned out. But I think a lot of that was just, it was 6 p.m., I think, Central Time. Mm-hmm. So some people West Coast couldn't make it and then, you know, whatever. So we'll do another one. And I got some really great feedback from people who wanted some more live
waffle lessons. Eating.
Yeah, live waffle. Yeah, they're like, enough of this story stuff. We want you to drink whiskey and eat waffles for us. And I said, fine, twist my arm.
My sacrifice for the community.
Please don't call me a hero. Yeah, so they wanted more mini lessons and that sort of thing. So it was really great for me to get an idea of what people are looking for. And so I have some ideas I'm brewing up.
That's awesome. Please let us know when those ideas are fully steeped and then we will see the full concentration of those ideas.
We'll add a little sugar to it and then we'll...
Definitely.
Or honey.
Definitely lemon. I have a webinar coming up next week. I may have the link for it by the time this goes live, but if I do not, just stay tuned for it. The 5 mistakes authors most commonly make with their book descriptions, free class... coming a week from Thursday. That'll be on Thursday the 24th. So stay tuned. It'll be at the ripe old time of 3 p.m. Eastern when the UK is going to bed, Australia's waking up, and the US is in that 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock feeling. Mm-hmm. So perfect time for a webinar.
Yeah.
And I'll let you guys know when that is up and ready to sign up for.
Can you give us a little hint about a little preview?
Sure.
What's one of the mistakes?
One of the mistakes. These are really pointed questions, the way you're asking them.
I'm sorry.
What are the mistakes? There's mistakes, Brian. One of the big mistakes is trying to pack in far too much plot into a single sentence or paragraph. We see a lot of blurbs that just have run on after run on because authors in question don't know what to pull out of it and what subplots to remove and side characters to remove, but usually a lot more can be removed than you think.
Mm, great.
And that is
sold.
Our teaser.
Yeah.
We'll be there. Well, thank you, Claire. I'm excited to hear about all the brewing ideas coming forward. How about we go into this week's housekeeping, as we call it over here. The winner of your Supercharger Story course is Shez Shurton. Maybe would you on the spot be willing to give them a copy of the series course if they'd already won?
This week, yes.
Okay. Next week in the future. No, I just mean because they won before.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like they need to win something.
Right. Or we'll figure it out. Just email me and we'll figure out what you want, what I can help you with.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Sorry to put you on the spot. this is just what I do. Patron number one of our 3 featured patrons is Doubt the Stars by Emily Selleck. A hologram crisis murder, a hidden lie. Can she expose her father's killer? If you like brooding suspense, strong female characters, and fascinating retellings, then you'll love Emily Selleck's engrossing tale that is Doubt the Stars.
And then we have Leah's Choice by Patricia M. Jackson. Ingredients: 1 feisty female chemist, 1 straight-laced businessman. Combine with stinky bagels, quinoa, and stir to find the unexpected. If you like fast-paced, witty banter, follow this delightful Jewish couple through the good, bad, and hilarious to discover love among the bagels. That is Leah's Choice.
Oh, as long as there's some lox and we've got the cream cheese, I would love to set aside the gefilte. And
I would almost say
Leah's Choice.
This should be called Love Among the Bagels.
I would love that. Maybe that's the subtitle, but that's Leah's Choice. And then we have Plague at Snake Creek by Rob Moody. It's a Western with zombies. Confederate veteran Ezekiel Cool leads a quiet life as small town sheriff in the Dakota Territory, haunted by nightmares of wars gone by. He just wants to be left alone. Then a man gets off the riverboat and bites the town drunk, who then bites someone else, who then, Ezekiel, is thrust back into the role of soldier again. Now he just wants to survive the night. What a fun little mashup there. Plague at Snake Creek. I really like that. I like that blurb there.
Yeah, that is a fun one.
So you too can join Ezekiel Cool and become a patron at patreon.com/SMBS. As a reminder, one of the new perks is you will get the show approximately 8 hours early, which, hey, for some of you around the world, that's right when you wake up instead of having to wait till the end of the day. We have a question of the week from last week, which was, what's one positive thing you're experiencing that you wouldn't have experienced were it not for the pandemic-related changes to the world? Claire, I believe you're up first.
Sure. AD said, I learned that more time doesn't always translate to more productivity. I wrote a little more around my day job, which I'm very grateful to be able to do from home with no loss of wages, but not a significant amount more. It was also less focused, possibly due to the maxim that any task has the capacity to expand in order to fill the time allotted. I always thought that was something more attributed to task-oriented jobs rather than creative ones, but it looks like I have to get myself organized properly.
Good words there. Yeah.
Whew, man. Never were truer words spoken.
Right. I definitely find that my tasks expand, which is, we were just talking about off the air, if I were to stop doing certain things, the fear is everything just expands. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same thing with like a purse. That's why I keep small purses.
I need a
bigger purse, and then I get a bigger purse, and then I just get a sore back from carrying.
Yeah. Yeah, we can get you one of those tiny doll purses.
Yeah, give me
50 cents in change. Monica T. Rodriguez said, I am enjoying not commuting, and it has given me time to fit in both exercise and writing in my mornings if I get up early enough, which is now an option. Thanks for the reminder about Pinterest. I've had an account for years and used to be active there. I should take a look at it again. Very nice. That is something. A lot of people have not been commuting, and that changes a lot of things, but why don't you go on to number three?
All right. We've got Nathan Bros, who said, first ever comment here, so please be nice. Great show. Thank you. Can't wait for Claire's AMA. I'm really interested in the course. My pandemic benefit is refurbishing my writing cabin. And way to bury the lead on that, Nathan, with
right.
your writing cabin.
Writing cabin. No, that's awesome. I wish I had a writing cabin. That's something I'd love to get. During this pandemic, a few friends of mine who are very much city people were just like, hey, we bought a cabin in the woods. And I'm like, did you watch Cabin in the Woods? Because you just might want to keep an eye on that first. So awesome. Claire, are you ready for the tips?
I am.
Great. Let's do it.
And now on the Sell More Books Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, Christmas in September. Christmas means big business for many in the publishing industry, says Alex Newton of Kaylytics. If you're a romance writer, it's time to consider whether you should write a Christmas-related book for 2020 or even adapt some existing content for the Christmas season. The free report, which we'll have a link to on the site, is based on peak season sales data from the previous Christmases, so you can write with confidence instead of wondering if there's a market for your story. The new Kaylytics 70-page report focuses on romance, but it is also useful as a seasonal publishing case study for any fiction categories. You can access the complete research report with a video at no cost at k-lytics.com. Claire, is it worth tweaking your publishing calendar to throw together a Christmas book, or should you just slot one in for 2021?
It's not worth it to me. I mean, it depends on, you know, what your publishing schedule looks like. I don't actually like Christmas that much, so I wouldn't enjoy writing a Christmas book.
An anti-Christmas book, perhaps?
I mean, yeah, I guess maybe I could thwart Christmas a little bit, but I just don't know that a book that I could really only market for like 3 months out of the year with any clear success is something that I want to invest my time in. But if you're writing a bunch of books and it's just something you can churn out real quick and it's going to make you some bank, I mean, go check out the Kaylytics report and see if it's something that makes sense for your business. And, you know, my consideration, I know a lot of people don't really take their personal considerations into account as much as I do, but I don't write books I don't think I would enjoy writing. So,
yeah. I definitely am ready for my Hanukkah horror book, Eight Nights of Hell, and we'll... We'll get that out there. And then Alex will make a whole report about it.
Great. Yeah. And awesome. The news will make a report about that.
I know. The bad guy is Hanukkah Harry, for what it's worth. All right.
You got to keep that close to the vest.
I know. Well, there's a twist. So why don't you go on to the second one?
All right. Second one. Outside in. Making time for nature may be less difficult than you think, according to a blog post on Dropbox. Social distancing has meant many of us are spending less time outside and away from nature, which is shown to cause stress, agitation, confusion, and depression. Quote, it can shrink the part of the brain responsible for making memories, reports Andrew Richdale of Dropbox. Quote, and it can grow the part responsible for fear and anxiety. Luckily, getting help from nature isn't as hard as you think. In one study, neuroscientists worked with prisoners in solitary confinement, simulating time outdoors by having them watch 45-minute videos of reefs, rolling waves, and forests teeming with life. That is so teeming. Cool.
That's teeming with life.
So cruel to do. 80% of those studied reported a greater sense of calm and were 26% less inclined towards aggression compared to the control group. What does this mean for authors at home? Florence Williams, author of The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative, says that while 2 hours a week in nature is ideal, even smaller doses can have a powerful effect. Quote, these moments are a kind of micro restoration for your brain and seem to boost creativity and productivity.
Well, now we can explain all my confusion away living in the city. But Claire, I know you're a big fan of taking out the dogs and getting the sun, the Texas sun. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this other than this study on people in solitary confinement?
Right. Here are all the things you can't get at. You know, I agree with this. I agree with it personally, but also there's science to back it up. So that I think matters more than my anecdotal experience. But yes, a little bit of time outside, even if you do live in a city, like nature is just outside, like you're getting the sunlight, you are feeling the breeze, you are experiencing things at a slower rate than when you are looking at a screen, and you're getting new stimulation that you wouldn't get in your house. So I think it's great. I think a lot of people have taken up gardening, doing their little victory gardens this pandemic, and discovering how much peace of mind and it provides and the sort of anxiety reducing benefits of it. So just a little bit of time outside is great. I take breaks throughout the day and just go sit in the silence of outside.
What is a victory garden? Why is it called a victory garden?
Oh, it goes back to like World War II, I believe. So it was sort of like supporting the troops by growing your own food so that resources could be used for people fighting a war. So it was just called victory garden, and now people are just calling it a victory garden because it gives us purpose. I don't know.
Hey, why not? And nothing wrong with having a few extra victories. Mm-hmm. Let's go into number three, the secret to human-centered marketing. When author Corey Ajmi couldn't figure out marketing, she reconnected with people, according to a post on Books by Women. My brain wouldn't focus, she said. Instead, I scrolled. Not knowing what to do, she focused on how to be a good literary citizen. Quote, I followed new people, trying to build genuine connections and did for others what I'd want them to do for me. But my own Instagram page proved frustrating as I had ideas but couldn't implement them. End quote. Ajmi finally turned to her daughter for help and the pair began a successful collaboration. The two made their approach human-centered in the spirit of what she'd already been doing. And says the author, the author's dread just disappeared. In 2.5 months, her book had launched. She gained 250 new followers, was having a blast in her new partnership with her daughter. Marketing can be a little lonely. I think it's a nice idea to try to get as much as you can based on connecting with people if that ends up being what you want to do. Obviously, not everyone would want to connect with more people in marketing. But what were your thoughts on this, Claire?
I actually have quite a few thoughts on this. I think that it is interesting. I mean, she has results, 250 new followers. I think the biggest benefit she's getting out of this is enjoying it. I don't know that the 250 followers are converting to sales. We don't really know that. That seems unlikely that they're converting to a lot of sales, but she's getting something out of it. And I think as solitary people, us writers often are, it's good to remember that you need to be human centered. And the idea of going out and creating connections is good. There's, you know, the idea of reciprocation,
mm-hmm.
which some people expect to be very direct one-to-one in their interactions, right? Like, I gave you this, now you give me something. Mm-hmm. But I think just going out and creating that energy and not expecting anything in return is going to give you a big benefit.
I've always been a big fan of relationship building in publishing. And one of my earliest tips that I continue to give year after year is, you know, those big multi-author promos that people are always trying to get into, or anthologies, the best way to get into an anthology is to run your own and connect with other people. Now, I know, and you know from experience, that there are challenges setting these kinds of things up, but building the relationships from actually creating connection points with other people and being the person who helps others by creating these opportunities is just so valuable. And I think that's along the lines of this human-centered focus.
Well, right. And just like with evolution, that connection for us feels life or death. And I mean, I talk a lot in my story stuff about want versus need and being able to figure that out for our characters. But I think figuring out for ourselves, a lot of the times the things that we want, we confuse them with things that we need, but really what we think we're going to get out of those things we pursue is actually just deeper connection. And that's really what we need and what we've been craving. And we try and do it through a variety of ways that make no sense at all. But in the end, like,
we do that. Yes.
we write because we want to connect with people. We write these books and these stories because we have this deep need for connection with other people. And so if you forget about that, you get so caught up on selling books that you forget that you're really just trying to serve this purpose of connecting with people. So you can connect with people along the way and it makes the whole thing better.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's really great. And hopefully if you are feeling like you're in kind of Corey Ajmi's boat where you are trying all these things and they don't seem to be connecting, bring it back to people.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
9 years and still learning. Author Joanna Penn is celebrating 9 years as a full-time author/entrepreneur this September, shares The Passive Voice. As she does every year, Penn reflects on her lessons learned in the years as a full-time author. Penn notes that her goal to be global, digital, scalable, and location independent has made her business incredibly resilient, especially important in pandemic times, as it gives her diversification and flexibility not found in many other businesses. Quote, "This business model has always been good to me, but in 2020, the global pandemic meant it really demonstrated its value," said the author. "I have had no disruption to the business because there is nothing physical to disrupt. If anything, people have bought more books and courses online." Penn says some of her goals have changed over time, and that's okay. Quote, "I often talk about the author journey," she says, "but it's also a life journey. I'm still figuring out what this next step looks like, but I'm certainly excited for the next year ahead."
I think a lot of us self-publishers are in the same boat with nothing physical to disrupt, but Joanna has always focused on the international. And I mean, we have coming up, it is an election year, and traditionally the times around election are a little slower for book sales. And if everything you're focused on is US oriented coming up soon, you might wonder what's happening, especially if you didn't have as many books out in November 2016. And so this global diversification and different format diversification that Joanna has preached for years, and then kind of thinking about Christine Catherine Rush, who always talks about big world events impacting things, it's helpful to have a lot of different options as far as where you're bringing in money from. What sticks out in this one to you, Claire?
Well, I think we're looking again at that longer timeline. And that's what I really like about what certain authors like Joanna Penn does this, and Chris Fox does his year interview. And they're very open and honest about it, and they compare it to previous years. And so we get to actually see the progress over time, which is super helpful because, I mean, Joanna Penn is taking an approach that a lot of people don't want to do because it's a slower build. And that's the trade-off, right? So you get to see that, yes, it's been a slower build by going wide and focusing internationally and really looking at these multiple formats for her work. But when stuff comes, you've got some security and you can, like, we're going to be able to see it paying off with this.
It's a lower ceiling than going faster, but it's a much higher floor. Mm-hmm. Like, you do not see as much fluctuation when you are considering the long-term path. And I love that. And I think that I know I can do better with that. I know that I can do better with the thinking further ahead than just a few months. But this is a great post to really help us reconnect. And I know we shared this through the Passive Voice, but obviously you can get the full article at the Creative Pen as well.
Well, right. And I think it also goes to each person's ability to handle risk. I think that's really important, your need for security and stability versus risk. Some people are totally fine taking that big risk, putting all their eggs in one basket and going for it. And if it doesn't work out, they're like, oh, I'll figure out something else. While other people need that stability to even be able to, like, think clearly, you know, to, like, make themselves a scrambled egg, they have to be able to know that they have that financial stability. So yeah. I think knowing yourself and what you can and can't handle is, there's not like a better decision here, but these are the trade-offs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, we could say a whole bunch of things about people's understanding of their own risks in their other business, but we'll save that for another day as we go on to number four.
Number four.
Goodbye, Goodreads. Could Goodreads be on its way out? Sarah Manavis of The New Statesman thinks it might be. Goodreads is the world's largest community for reviewing and recommending books, but for many readers, even checking what they've already read is next to impossible. Quote, across a huge range of reading habits and preferences, writes Manavis, the one thing that unites millions of users is that Goodreads sucks and is just shy of unbearable. End quote. There have been multiple attempts to unseat the reigning champion, but none have come close to succeeding until Storygraph appeared, and it's showing promise. Storygraph's founder, Nadia Odenayo, says this is different because she didn't want to simply create a different version of Goodreads. She interviewed readers for months to find pain points that Goodreads didn't fix, such as choosing your next book to read and finding persistently high-quality recommendations. Storygraph is off to a good start with 40,000 registered users. Odenayo says the backlash against big tech could help her site's trajectory. There are a lot more people who are looking for reasons to not just settle for Amazon products. I haven't really checked out Storygraph. I'll believe it when I see it, that there's something that can really be a competitor. But how funny is that quote? One thing that unites millions of users is that Goodreads sucks and it's just shy of unbearable. I would say at least a few people agree with that. What do you think of this piece, Claire?
I think that maybe some people feel that way. I don't feel that way. I like Goodreads. I don't need it to do that much for me. I mean, personally, it's like I want to see what my friends are reading, and I add some books to my to-be-read list, and I track my reading goal for the year on there. It's just, I don't know what people, I mean, I will say that they just changed the app on Android. And so it's really hard to find your reading goal now. And so that kind of like annoyed me because you have to like dig and like scroll down. I actually had to ask John, like, where is this reading goal? Did they get rid of this? So there are some tweaks, but I don't think the platform's unusable. I'll check out the.
I think this is conflating with authors hating getting negative reviews on Goodreads.
Oh,
a little bit.
If you're an author, it is a bit of a hellscape there. It's hard. People are tough on Goodreads, so your scores are, your ratings are always going to be lower on Goodreads. I try not to get into that. I just, you know, I have it there. I have my author profile that, you know, people can follow me or whatever, but I mostly just use it as a reader.
I think that authors who aren't readers probably hate it more than authors who are readers. It would be my guess. But
these authors who aren't readers, don't get me started.
I know. I don't get it either. But we always do like competition on the show. So good luck to Storygraph or any other competitors. For now, Goodreads ain't going anywhere. So we'll
right. See no need to freak out and stop doing stuff on Goodreads if you're doing stuff on Goodreads. I don't think that's the point we're at.
Agreed. All right. Moving on to number three.
Number three.
Less is more. You can always make more money, but you will never make more time. You will never get back the time you spent promoting your book. On the other hand, why spend precious time writing a book that no one reads because you didn't market it? How can you maximize your time? Start by measuring. Quote, if you can't measure your marketing, you can't determine what's working, says Thomas Umstadt Jr. on authormedia.com. For indies, it's easy. Every major book sales dashboard has somewhat timely data. But if you're a traditionally published author, it can be hard. So be sure to join Amazon's affiliate program to get trackable links so you can see where your sales come from. You might be surprised to find out how few sales come from social media. Even though it hurts, it's good to know because you can stop wasting valuable time there. Now that you have some of your time back, it's time to reinvest in learning, writing, and even rest. Quote, the willingness to measure, prune, invest, and refine resources will separate successful authors from unsuccessful authors, writes Umstadt. You can burn out by doing everything the hard way, or you can follow these steps and transform your writing career.
Time. It's we were just talking about thinking of things on a long timeline, and this plays into that, really, thinking about, will you remember in 6 years what you did to market this book, or will you remember like the 3 hours you put into trying to learn some platform that you never use again? Thomas's thoughts here on measuring and the ability to measure and the understanding of measurement is really important here, because some things are worth it. I'm finding myself learning more about sales page conversion for things related to my author business. And obviously I've focused a lot on sales page conversion on Amazon, and now I'm learning to do it elsewhere. And it's going to take me 10 to 15 hours to learn. But if I do learn it, and I do learn the ability to measure the improvements on it, there's a possibility that that time is very valuable to me in 3 to 5 years. But not everything is going to be valuable in that span of time. What are your thoughts on this, on the time, the measurement? What's worth it for you? What's been worth it for you?
I mean, I'm with you. You got to measure it. If you're not measuring it, then you're going on your gut, and your gut is not generally correct on this.
Wrong sort of so often.
Like, your gut may be good in like picking a partner, you know, but it's not going to be good in measuring time and measuring, you know, sales versus time. It's not great at that, right? So I think this is a good thing. I have personally found social media does almost nothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, it's building your brand, but I don't have the time to build a brand. I need to sell stuff to people. Like, I mean, I'll build my brand a little bit, but I like to build it through my products. And, you know, there's kind of like, okay, I'm not Pepsi. I can't just throw ads out there and hope that it hits people at the right time. Like, I need to measure this because I don't have that big of a budget.
No time and money for the front page New York Times ad kind of thing.
Yeah, there won't be the FFS Media halftime, you know.
Show? Oh, I would love that. Who would your artist be? Dave or?
Oh, it would 100% be Dave Matthews Band.
Okay.
And the entire thing would be two-step for 15 minutes.
Okay.
Just a really long live.
Okay. That's good to know. So I feel like the one point I have to make that hasn't really been made yet, if you do have a traditionally published book, there are ways to run Amazon ads, like using something like Publish Drive or using an Amazon seller account. You can do this. There are things you have to do with the seller account, with like trademarks, and there's things you have to do with the Publish Drive account, like pay ahead of time, but it's doable. You can track your sales rank even if you don't have access to Author Central. You can use something like the Kindle Nation Daily Sales Rank Tracker, which lets you track over time. Before I even knew about Author Central, I knew about that one. But it's not just about rank improving. It's not just about sales. It's about profit as well. I've had people respond on my Facebook ads for the upcoming October ad challenge, say, why are you discriminating against non-indie authors? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is an interesting point of view. The reason I would say, if any way I'm discriminating against non-indie authors is, if an indie author barely makes a profit with a $2 return on a $3 book, and a traditionally published author makes 40 cents on that same book, the chances of them making a profit on that 40 cent return is so low that I'm really just trying to save non-indie authors from pouring a bunch of money down a hole. It's tough to have that perspective when you're seeing Facebook ads come across your feed. Measure, but also make sure profit is possible. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I was looking this up while we were doing the show. Ragweed seems to have invaded Chicago. Because I was like, why am I suddenly going through like five tissues here? And it's like, oh, the thing I'm allergic to has just descended. So we'll do number two, and then I'll let you talk for a while, okay. Claire. Here comes number two.
Number two.
Move over, Oprah. Have you ever wanted to start a book club but don't know how to start one? Well, neither does Amazon, apparently. Spotted by Nate Hofelder, The Digital Reader, the new Amazon book clubs feature the tagline, your books deserve great conversations, yet don't have any sort of discussion or group communication features. Quote, I missed this at first because I simply assumed that something called a book club would have club-like features, writes Hofelder. Any Amazon customer can create a club, and there are many thousands already, including some specifically with indie authors in mind, and a few intrepid authors have already been heard to have started clubs as a way to engage with their own readers. So I guess it's kind of a club in name only. I haven't clicked around to see this. Obviously, Nate Hofelder always throws a nice little bit of shade at Amazon on these sorts of things. Interesting. One would think there would be some sort of meetings, like rooms kind of feature for this, but maybe that's a part they have not put together quite yet.
Yeah, I don't see why they would either. I mean, that seems like a lot of programming and hosting and even liability, just creating those chat rooms or anything like that. You know, then you have to like regulate hate speech and stuff. I don't know. But they don't need to do it because authors can do it. You know, I think that's fine. I would feel weird creating a book club for any of my stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I have been approached by people who wanted to order copies for a book club. I'm like, that's fine. Like, let me know if you need anything. I'll send you some copies. But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea to build your little community.
So I'm clicking on add to book club. Looks like you're not a member of any clubs. We'll create a book club. And you can say, I'm going to call this the H. Claire Taylor Ew. Book Club. Describe your club. Fangirls of H. Claire Taylor. Location is optional. You could put in your zip code. That's okay.
Put my home address. Just go ahead.
I'll put your home address. Private. Allow membership requests. And you can add tags. We'll put Claire in there. All right, cool. Let's create this. You can add a book, invite a member, suggest a book, add books we've read, then you can manage people. So it's really just about taking the books that are on Amazon, putting them into some kind of Amazon-friendly listing, making it easier for people to buy said books, I would imagine. And then beyond that, you have the meetings at your own time, in your own platform. That's how it seems to work from the H. Claire Taylor fan club that I just created.
Oh, God.
Based on that, any thoughts on if you would use it or you would encourage a super fan to create one for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if my fans want to create stuff that helps me sell books, I'm not going to stop them. But I don't know that that's where I'm going to put my energy right now. But if someone has some energy to put towards that, why not? You know, I mean, a lot of the times readers will approach you and it's like, you just, it's like, okay, I got to find something for this person to do, you know, like right. they want to do something. And so that's not a bad option to point them towards that. If they're like, yeah, we really want to, you know, talk about this and blah, 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 you just send them that.
And it's worth remembering that sometimes giving your super fans things to do, if there are, if you have super fans and they want to do things, find some way to use them, because there's no need to take all of that on yourself. After all, there's only so many hours in the day.
Exactly.
Cool. Let's go into the big number one story. And I believe you're up, Claire.
And now the number one top five news items.
To link or not to link? Facebook ads getting canceled? You're not alone. Authors are having ads shut down, old and new, reports Kirsten Oliphant in her Creative Writing Facebook group. After hours of chats with Facebook support, it was determined that it has to do with linking directly to Amazon. Quote, when running Facebook ads, the wisdom has always been to run direct ads to Amazon, not redirects, as Facebook sometimes shuts them down, Oliphant says. Not anymore, though. Authors are reporting ads and ad accounts being shut down for URL violations, even running clean links to Amazon, with some Amazon reps saying that links to Amazon are not allowed. While this seems likely to pass, Oliphant has suggestions on how to improve your odds. One, change out your links with redirects like Books to Read, Bitly, Reader Links, or Pretty Links. Two, try the Facebook debug tool on your URL in case the issue is the cached link. Not that you're going to Amazon. Finally, try creating a landing page. Yes, it's an extra click that could decrease conversion, says the author, but, quote, in the battle of having ads running versus not having ads at all, having ads wins. Author Alyssa Flowers, who first brought this to our attention, has reported dozens of authors posting about the issues in Facebook groups and has experienced it herself. Quote, my income took a 50% hit since these ads issues started, Flowers said. It's scary. I didn't realize my sales were so Facebook ad reliant. Now, this has been a big thing.
It's the number one story, Claire. Yeah. I have heard some people refer to this as the Facebook ad apocalypse. Everything's an apocalypse. Can it be something else?
I know. What would that be?
I don't know. I don't know.
What is a step down from apocalypse?
Catastrophe?
Okay. Yeah, catastrophe.
Yeah, it's not quite as big as the world ending, but it's still like, whoa, catastrophic.
If you're going to expand that timeline, it's really more of a speed bump.
Right. Anything will level out over time. So a lot of people have gotten ads canceled. I mean, these kind of things happen on Facebook all the time. I think my Facebook page got disallowed for about 12 hours to run ads. I wasn't even running any ads to any books, but it just Amazon or Facebook has this happen every so often. But for people like Alyssa, who were seeing so much dependent on Facebook ads, to have them go down even for a day or two when it seems like some people are getting them back up, this is a real pain, and it brings into question like big things and little things. The little things are like, what do you do when things require you to do some workarounds? But in the big picture, what if Facebook did say, nah, no Amazon links anymore? So there's little things to think about and big things to think about. What would you rather tackle first, Claire?
I mean, the detail stuff, we're always going to have to figure out little tweaks to make these things work for us. I think if your mentality is like, I'm just going to set it, I'm going to figure it out that one time, and then it's going to cruise forever, then you're probably in for some hurt and disappointment. Because you always have to, these things always evolve. I mean, Facebook is in itself very new, right? 2005, 2006, like it's right. been in constant evolution. So if you're going to use a platform to sell your books that is in this much evolution, you know, this constant flux and changes, you have to be ready for that and not let it get you down if you're committed to it. But I think, yeah, at the larger scale, Facebook and Amazon, they, you know, they're two big companies and they compete for attention, and it's entirely possible that one will just say, no, we're not working with the other.
But here's the interesting thing. Amazon could be the one mm-hmm. pushing back on this. Maybe not even Facebook. Amazon could be saying, no, we want people to use our ads. We don't know, really. Because Amazon is well within its rights to say, you can't link to us through a Facebook ad.
I mean, I guess. We don't know what the rights are, really.
Yeah,
it's also new.
It is. But, it is.
Yeah, I think that goes back to Joanna Penn's diversifying, not just your, you know, your platforms, but like your ad platforms, you know, not just sales, but where you're advertising and getting your readers, because you don't know. But also it reminds me a little bit of when you lost your freelance job, right? And you're like, whoa, there goes half my income, and you recovered. So I don't think you need to, you know, freak out if 50% of your revenue, your income takes a hit because of this Facebook thing. You can go, you know, obviously that's going to shake you. I'm not going to say don't get freaked out.
Of course, of course.
But you also just got a really interesting piece of data you didn't have before, which was that 50% of your income was coming from Facebook, right? So now you're a little bit smarter and you can figure out how to work around that.
And if you can't work around it, there's the landing page idea that mm-hmm. Kirsten mentioned. There's the idea of, what if you started running email list ads on Facebook instead of simply sending them directly to a sales page? This has been a thing for years where you've had a choice between sending direct, gathering an email list, and a lot of people prefer direct selling because they say, well, I need money now. But going back to Joanna's point, like you just said, diversifying. What if you want to make more sales by having your launches be bigger, from having bigger email teams and getting more reviews? And that is also a possibility.
Definitely. So, I mean, just got to remember you're sharecropping on all these places.
So. I'm sharecropping left and right. No, it is. That's the huge thing. It's all about how much can you bring back to you? And if the only thing you're running ads on is sending people directly to a sales page, you don't necessarily get to keep those people. Yeah. So awesome show stuff today. Claire, we're kind of keep circling around this 6 to 10 year idea. How would you like to contextualize that in a question of the week, you think?
I mean, I would almost like to give people homework. Of making
like homework.
A timeline of like the last 5 or 6 years, writing down some of your accomplishments and some of your, you know, if you can remember them, some of your failures that you thought you wouldn't recover from, and sort of saying like, oh, what perspectives does that give you?
I love that. Will you do the homework? The homework is create a timeline of the last 5 or more years, marking some of the setbacks that you've had to recover from over time, and give a little info about what kind of perspective that has yielded in your life. You can answer the question of the week at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 337. I think I'm on 337 ragweed allergy tissues here. Claire, do you have any wise words of wisdom that you'd like to share with the group at this time?
No, I think I've done enough. Is that, I'm sorry. I'll keep talking while you continue to blow your nose over there. I think this whole show has had a lot of perspective and wisdom in it. Not just for me. I'm not patting myself on the back, but I think a lot of the stories we've picked have given people good stuff to think about.
Definitely. And thank you to Roland for doing the hunting for us. And we really appreciate the perspective everybody here gives us. We have 330 plus episodes and over 1 million downloads. Huge perspective, to quote Spinal Tap, too much perspective. We really appreciate you having us in your phone or computer or car or wherever you listen to us. And we just love getting to do this show every single week. So hop on down to sellmorebookshow.com, leave a comment this week. We'd love to see your thoughts and your timeline. And we will be back next week. That is 1 week on the timeline. We'll be back with episode 338. So for H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Sniffly Cohen, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks so much, and have a great week of book selling, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!